Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
We're back. We're back.
Hey, baby.
Hey, baby.
How's it going?
All good, mate. All good. Beautiful, beautiful reception to last week's episode with Vicky.
Yeah, amazing.
Which was really nice, man. Like, obviously, Vicky's our mate, so it was really easy to chat to her and that, I guess. But then all the people that we chat to, it's always really easy, isn't it? Like,
yeah, the bloke kind of the conversation just flows, doesn't it?
Yeah, like, even like today, like none of us have met Martin, have we? I've not met him. Have you met him?
No, I spoke to him a couple of times when we've been out on the lash. Spoke to him over the phone, but no, I've never met him. Speak to him quite a bit on social media and whatnot. But I guess we've got like loads in common, haven't we? Really, we was both, you know, we all started really when we was really young doing what we do.
Yeah. Obviously, Martin in Sweet 16, and us in what was we in?
I can't remember what it was called.
Summer. Little Britain.
Yeah. Little Britain. Yeah.
I like it.
I love it when people come up to me in the street and they go, Made in England's the best film I've ever seen.
Made in Britain, so, mate. Love it.
Never seen it, pal. Never seen it. It was a good one, this, because we touched base on it before in the chat, don't we, where we're saying it's kind of funny when, because Martin's obviously... He's hot property at the minute, really, isn't he? With a nest and how well that's doing, and obviously with Line of Duty as well. But we sort of touch base on how when you've got something on, everyone sort of wants a piece of you. Whereas like we've been trying to get Martin on for a long time, haven't we? And we was very close to getting him on before we had to take the break, obviously down to like filming commitments and stuff. So it's good to finally get him on.
Man.
The subject was mint as well, wasn't it? Well, a couple of subjects.
Yeah, he's got a couple of subjects, which we found, haven't we, really, that, like, a lot of guests do, but, I mean, it's one of them, a lot, you know, as actors, I guess we are a bit moany, aren't we, I guess? It's always the actors that have more than one subject. two good subjects. Obviously, the one that you've seen in the title, and already it's causing a little bit of stir on the Instagram
social
and stuff.
Media, they're loving it, aren't they, people are saying. But then when he told me about it as well, I was like, this is bullshit, I said.
Yeah,
there's absolutely no way that they're overrated. Sunday dinners, they're my favourite thing.
Well, one minute, how do I unblur my background? Let me just show you what I'm doing today, because my missus, as you know, she's a nurse, so tomorrow she's, oh God, see that sun just come in. She's at work tomorrow, which we're recording this on Saturday, in between, just for anyone watching, in between Good Friday and Easter Sunday. So we're celebrating Easter today with my little girl, so she's had her eggs this morning and stuff, and... I've got this bad boy. Sorry,
I think I saw this.
Look at this beaut. Where are we? Oh, aye.
What is it?
It's like a lamb. It's a leg of lamb.
Oh, it looks hairy.
It's rosemary. So you rosemary sprigs on it and garlic inside. I did that this morning.
Get your fingers in there, lad.
Garlic and rosemary. I need to wash my hands now. I'll do it in a sec. Don't worry, guys. Garlic and rosemary lamb. So that's ready. I love a roast dinner. Who doesn't love a roast dinner?
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Yeah, Charlotte did one. Charlotte did a good roast dinner last Sunday. But it's kind of, it's weird though, because it's only me and Charlotte in the house, like we'll go out and buy like a big chicken and all the veg and do everything. And it's like loads of it goes to waste.
Yeah, do you never have bubble and squeak?
Well, we've spoke about this before, haven't we? We've
spoke about
No, my mum used to do it a lot, but I've never done it. No. Oh, and it's like, I'm not a fan of heating up a Sunday dinner on a Monday. Like,
no,
my dad comes round a lot for a Sunday dinner, and he'll always say to me, plate me one up for work, and I'm like, I can't think of anything worse than warming a Sunday dinner up.
I think I could do it if you didn't, like, you can't warm the gravy up, so you've got to do that one without gravy, and then just do some of that Bisto stuff or something the next day, do you know what I mean? Do a bit of that.
Some of that Bisto stuff. I love that, because you make your own gravy, don't you?
I make my own gravy, mate. My grandma's... let's say it's my grandma's recipe. I guess it is. But yeah, I love my own gravy.
That gravy you made me when I was round at yours just before Christmas, wasn't it? You made me some nice food with that good gravy. Yeah, love it.
It was nice.
It's good.
But yeah, no, I love a roast. And then Martin's other subject is award shows, which I've been to a few. You've probably been to more than me. We had a bit of banter about that, so, you know.
Mm-hmm. But again, that was another great subject, because I guess it goes on who you're with. It goes on what kind of award ceremony it is, whether there's decent booze there, and whether there's decent food. Because I think, like with the BAFTAs, I know they don't do food, and they encourage people not to get drunk. So that's kind of like, I don't know, you're kind of sitting there all night and you're just watching people thank people who you don't know. Yeah. For a film that you probably haven't seen yet, and it's like, but then if you go to the Anime Awards and you get to see Slow Ty having a fight, you know, that's
then you're all good.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say the award ceremonies where you do get food, isn't it normally like a sort of semi roast? So then maybe the two go hand in hand for Martin. Maybe we're on.
Maybe that's why he hates them. Then
he just doesn't like the dinners.
Yeah. Really. It's always really posh food.
Yeah.
I always find if I go to an award ceremony, I'll always go for a Macca's or something after.
If it depends where you are, like, go and get... But then you're drunk, aren't you, like you say, so I love a decent kebab or, like you say, a Macca's or something when you've had a few drinks.
Going back to the Stephen Graham episode after his fine dining.
Oh, yeah, true.
That really, really nice meal that really hurt his pocket. Yeah. And then as soon as he got out, he said to Hannah, let's go to Leicester Square, I'm starving.
I'm fucking starving.
It's all that fine dining, and it's just, award ceremonies aren't really for me. They're a nice little treat every now and then, but they're not really for me. So I agree with Martin on that. But the roast dinner thing, I think, is full of shit.
Yeah, definitely. Just while we're here and we're talking a little bit before we get into Martin's chat, I'm going to put the first series on YouTube at some point. So if you do watch or listen to this via YouTube, we're going to put the first series on. Obviously, we didn't record videos for the first series, so it's going to be audio only, as is Martin's interview coming up. A couple of our guests, just they don't really want to do video.
Some people are a bit...
You understand Go on. I was just going to say, you understand it, because like Martin said, like, he's got his little one and that, and it was early morning, because he was in Vegas. He lives in Vegas, doesn't he? So we called him late at night here, but it was early morning there, so...
Yeah,
he'd not been up, showered and stuff yet. And it's like, yeah, fair play. So unfortunately, there won't be video for Martin's interview, but there's still audio. I'll put a nice little picture up of something. Hope you still enjoy it, really.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. It was a good one. But I think we say this after every single chat that we have. And as soon as we either walk away from the guests, say bye, or we shut down the laptops, we call each other straight after. And we say every time, I think that was our best one. Which is a good thing, because it just means that we're still loving what we're doing. And by the reaction that we're getting on social media, it sounds like you guys are still loving it as well. So thank you for that. And again, like, thanks for still caring, because I guess it's like, because we had such a long time. This is probably our longest break, this one, wasn't it?
Nearly a year, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, nearly a year out. And it's like, for people to still be bothered and interested, so it does mean a lot. But again, you know, it's we're just very fortunate now that with technology, it's very much not overrated, Kieran. Just means that we can get more guests on and keep give the people what they want.
Give the people what they want. All right. Well, without much further ado, let's put Martin's interview on. If you are new to it or whatever, you'll notice that after the interview finishes, there is a little bit of time left on your video or your podcast. Fast forward or listen to the jingle, because it's a lovely jingle. that the Sherlock's made us. So have a listen to that.
Now, hopefully they're going to come on soon.
Yes, that'll be good
as well. We're trying to figure that out. We're trying to figure out the best way. Because there's four of them. It's a difficult thing because it's like you don't want to have six people on a chat all just battering. So we're trying to figure that out. So hopefully that'll be coming soon. They have agreed to do it. So.
Oh, yeah. So that'll be cool. So, yeah, after the jingle, there's going to be a little bit more chat, just a couple of minutes. Me and Tomo kind of winding down and that. So have a listen because we've got a few announcements and stuff. So, yeah, ready for Martin?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Martin Compson, how's it going, Martin?
Not bad, lads. How's yourself? How's your lockdown going?
Good. Yes, yeah, it's all right. I mean, you know, I can imagine yours is probably a little bit nicer, is it? Is it warm there this time of year, I guess?
Aye, mate. It is. The sun's out. I mean, it's hell of a windy Vegas, which is something I never knew until I moved here. But no, I mean, I kind of lied. There is a bit of sunshine and it does help waking up in the morning where, you know what I mean, just puts you in a better mood. But it's just crazy times, boys, isn't it?
It's like no time.
Yeah, everybody's in the same boat. And I mean, you guys will know as well, but in some ways, it is the kind of life of an unemployed actor. We just kind of sit.
We've been saying this. Yeah, we've been saying this, haven't we, Tomo? Like, we've kind of been practicing for this for years on end. Yeah. You know?
Well, I mean, but again, and also, I mean, I'm trying to take the positive out. So obviously, it's a worrying situation. And thankfully, people are starting to take it serious. But, you know, I've been catching up on a couple of films that I've been dying to see that I haven't had time for. Same with a couple of TV series I was wanting to watch and a couple of books I was wanting to read. So at the moment, yeah. And to be honest as well, I've been on a great run the last couple of years, which I've been very lucky with. But I've been away from home quite a lot. So it's just good to be home and spend a bit of time with the family and actually be present with them because you know what it's like. You know you're leaving for a job, you're always running scenes in your head or thinking about lines and thinking about what's coming up. You kind of find it hard to kind of concentrate on being home. So, I mean, I wish it was in a lot better circumstances and stuff, but I'm really enjoying just being home with the family.
Yeah, I've said that because it kind of feel guilty in one way, enjoying it, I guess, because you can't, because it is such a horrible thing. And, you know, like, unfortunately, like, people are really ill and in some cases dying. But, I'm the same as you, mate. Like, I've got two little ones and, you know, 5 minutes before this phone call, my youngest has just took her first steps and I'm glad to see it, you know what I mean?
Class.
Really nice. And you know what, like, you'll probably feel the same, but, like, the family unit just feels that much closer and nicer.
Absolutely, mate. Sometimes as well, I actually start to feel guilty, like, been on the road that long because I kind of realised you don't get this time back. you know. Mm. And so, I, as you say, I mean, again, I wish it was in a lot better circumstances, but
yeah,
I'm just trying to make the most of it and enjoying being with the family.
That's all you can do, really, isn't it? Like, I haven't got no children, but the amount of things that me and Charlotte are managing to get done around the house, things that we've been putting off, for, like, we moved into this house 5 years ago, and as soon as we moved in, we was like, we should do this for the back garden, we should do that, we should do this. And then life just sort of takes over, and then it all just gets sort of put to the back of your mind, whereas now, obviously, with Charlotte not being at work and me not being at work, we've got no excuse. So we're literally like, we're cleaning parts of the house that I didn't even know existed. Yeah. Like, we're getting so much more done. And it's like you said, Martin, it's like we just wish that it was under better circumstances.
Yeah.
But I don't think there is any guilt in enjoying the time with our families. And at the end of the day, you're doing exactly what you're being told to do. And I'm doing exactly what I'm told to be doing, is just staying at home. And, you know, now how you choose to, what you choose to do with your time, I guess, is completely up to you. And it's important to stay positive, isn't it? And it's important to stay like mentally strong throughout a time like this, because you can get sucked up in social media and all the terrible things that's going on, and it can be a bit of a nightmare, can't it?
Well, it is, but I mean, I think it's making kind of best opportunities as well. Like, I've always wanted to go back to my old school and speak to the drama students there, and, you know, because being where we're from and having a working class background, sometimes it's hard for kids from where we're from to kind of have the confidence to chase it. And I've never really had that time. And I phoned them up and I said, look, any chance you could get the kids on a Zoom call if I'm not doing anything? So we all kind of logged in and we just had this sort of hour long lovely chat, just talking about what it's like kind of being young actors and that stuff. So you say that it's trying to stay positive and kind of make the most of these things and kind of take things that we haven't had the opportunity to do.
Yeah, of course. It's good that you're doing things like that as well, because a lot of people could just use this time to just completely go off the radar and do their own thing, which is fair enough. But it's good that you're choosing to, you know, to give something back to where you came from and stuff. It's that's important and like very nice. Yeah. But how's life during the nest? Like, me and Andy have just been saying how much of huge fans we are of the show. Like, it's ridiculous. I'm obsessed with it at the minute. It's really, really
cheers,
good.
Pal. It's been a long time since I've done something sort of one so close to my own accent. You know, it's just my own voice.
Yeah.
But it was really liberating. Going on to a job, and because Nicole Taylor, I mean, she's an amazing writer. You know, she wrote Three Girls and she wrote Wild Rose. Mm-hmm. And she's at a stage of her career now where she has a lot of say in her productions. And in her stage selections, she would actually say, when this character speaks to this character, their accents get thicker. When you speak, and it's like when I speak to Sophie Rundle, who's my wife and is English from the South, very well spoken, I naturally, as you do, you speak a bit clearer. But when you speak to somebody else in Glasgow, the Mirren Max character would get a bit thicker. And it was great to be able to say to producers and stuff, I'm not changing it. That's what it says in the stage directions, and that's the way I'm playing it. And I feel with that, it feels really authentic. It feels raw. And I think with the amount of content that's out there at the minute, there's definitely people are becoming more open-minded. And I think that's thanks to things like Peaky Blinders. I mean, I don't understand every single word in Peaky Blinders because of thick, brummy accent, but you get the intention of it. You don't need to know every single fucking syllable. It really annoys me when people go like, can you just put the T in the middle of that? Like, nobody does that sort of thing. It's not the way normal people speak. And I think when you start clipping your accent like that, it clips your performance. And I think that comes across. And I really feel when I watch something on TV, at times I feel for people because they look a bit wooden. And I'm like, that's just because they're concentrating so much on their voice.
On the accent.
Yeah, and what some producers said in their ear about clarity. Like, you need to be understood in Leamington Spa or some pish like that. You know,
although
it should be about the performance first and foremost. And of course, we need to clean things up. And of course, in general, it needs to be understood. But I think we've become obsessed with every single little detail. And I think it was great to be on something like this where the writer rightly has so much power because she's earned it. And I think that's added to the drama of it because it feels real.
Yeah, it's so real and gritty. But I mean, I must say, I think that the first time I'd ever spoken to you was on the phone. I think you was I think you was out with Vicky. And I'd never heard you speak before. The only thing the only time I'd heard you speaking was in Line of Duty. And then when you came onto the phone with this thick Scottish accent, I was like, what? I was like, what? I expected you to have Arnott's voice from Line of Duty. And it's like, so I think, I mean, you grasped that accent and that sort of character for Line of Duty so perfectly as well. Like, I must say, I know you were just saying about how sometimes the performance can get taken away, but I mean, you messaged the other day, didn't you, and said it's the first time in such a long time that you've actually been able to do your own accent, and it's like a breath of fresh air.
Well, especially something on that big, you know, it's primetime TV, BBC One at Sunday 9 o'clock. Usually when I get to use my own accent, it's like an indie film, which, I mean, we made our names in indie film, boys, and it's our first love, but you've got to see, not the most amount of people see them. So to be on it that sort of time on the West Coast, and there's a scene in the episode last night where I'm sitting on this bench, and it's literally a minute's walk from my mum's house, you know?
Oh, really?
That's where I grew up. So, I mean, that felt...
And you put something amazing on the other day that 17 years before in Sweet 16, you was on the same bench just 17 years apart.
I know, and it was a bit cheeky because, I never told them, like, I knew the location was there, I never told them, just in case they changed it, because, you know, people can get funny like that, going, they can't do the same thing. And I just sort of engineered the block and during it, going, I think I should sit there. I really think I should be there.
You know what I mean? Love that.
Just so I could get it, and then I was buzzing doing it. But, you know, it really was a joy to do it. It's a brilliant cast, and I think, but it's one of these weird things as well. I've actually had people... Somebody showed me, I've been sent things like from, I think one of them was like from Radio Sheffield, and I think Jeremy Vine and stuff. Well, I think he says I do a good Scottish accent, and I've heard a lot of people say I do a bad Scottish accent. I'm not joking.
Because of how good your accent was in Line of Duty.
But it just goes, that's why, see, when I do the accent in Line of Duty, that's why I stay in it. Because when you meet people at first, say Series 1, I mean, you're talking nearly 10 years ago, people just believe what they hear. So when I know the accent's bad or it needs a bit of work and I messed up, you know, a certain word, because people already think I'm English, they don't ask questions. They just believe it.
Yeah,
so it's the same with this now. But then it's catch-22. The more people are finding out, I guarantee my accent's probably stronger than ever in Line of Duty now, but I guarantee now it'll be the most criticism I get next series because people know I'm Scottish, so they're listening.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know,
yeah.
So that's, it kind of goes hand in hand, but I think it's good enough. I think you're right as well, mate, with social media, it can bring you down a lot of that stuff. But
oh,
I think now, when you
God.
See how ridiculous that goes, like people saying I do a bad Scottish accent, you just got to go, all right, well, there's nothing I can do about that. And I think you've got to believe in yourself. I know when it's good and I know when it's bad. You know, so you've just got to go with your own judgment.
Yeah,
that's it. Like, the performance comes first as well, doesn't it? You know,
that's what I always got taught from a young age. I've always, like, the performance, say if my agent rang and said, oh, you've got this thing coming up, and I'm a bit worried about the accent, they'd say straight away, worry about the performance first.
It's a funny exercise of some of these things, because I struggle at times something with the American accent, because I can do the accent, no problem, but I think there's a whole, I don't want to go down a rabbit here, but there's a whole psychology that goes with it. Like, it's the way you carry yourself. Because I remember a dialect coach saying to me, like, you sound all right, but I don't believe you because you say excuse me, please, and sorry far too many times. And Americans don't say that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They're very direct. So if you keep saying, excuse me, ma'am, help me, please, they just think something's a bit off with you. And somebody told me as well, there's a interesting exercise when... If you're going to do an audition, I'd never do this. I kind of try to learn it American and then go on. But a lot of people say, do it in your own accent first, just to see how you're acting it. And then the accent next. You know, it's an interesting
that's a great thing, yeah.
Because then you'll see how you would naturally play it, rather than being restricted with the accent first.
Well, there you go. You might have just changed my future. you may have just changed my future. Do you want to be my agent? Please,
if Tomo gets a big Tomo gets a big HBO series now, Martin, you know where to go.
Oh, I'm on a cut for sure.
It's a funny thing. When I the first time my dad met Stephen Graham, when Stephen Graham visited me in Grimsby,
my dad had no idea that Stephen Graham was a Scouser. He genuinely thought that he was a Cockney because of Snatch. But I think
Stephen's that annoyingly fucking talented guy, though, isn't he?
Isn't it? Honestly,
he can do anything. Like, he's the kind of guy who can do like a Limerick and Australian or South African, or, you know, he just turns it on and no bother. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you guys know firsthand. I mean, he's just one of the greats now. But just as a human being, man, he's tops. You kind of beat him. He'd do anything for you.
Yeah, he's a lovely bloke, isn't he, man? He's a proper, like you say, same as us, like proper working class, proper down to earth lad, like.
But I mean, what a talent! You know what I mean?
It's doing like the duty with
him. It's like when you're on set with that, and that, like when I first watched, I actually watched it the other day. It was on Film 4 the other night, wasn't it, boys? This is England, and you kind of watch it again. It's the first time I watch it, and then in the back of your head, you go, oh, "This England's a great film," but you haven't seen. And then when you sit down and watch it again, going, "Jesus Christ, this is a masterpiece." And Stephen in it, man, that scene when he's got you boys in the room and he's going across the line and all that, it's just, it's the best of British, you know what I mean? And when you see stuff like that, that's when you go, like, why awards? I mean, I know Stephen, but he should be walking away with BAFTAs and stuff for like that. You know, it was a stunning performance. And whole film together.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. But Stephen, you know, Stephen struggled for work a little while after This Is England, and I almost think it's like, was he too good?
Did you find that after This Is England? Because after Sweet 16, I struggled because people think that's you. You're that new character.
Well, you was bought into it very similar to me. I'm right in thinking, Anna Martin. You was found very randomly.
Well, I mean, I remember Des Hamilton's a good pal of mine.
Yeah, of course he is.
I remember he was casting for it. Because you remember I auditioned for This Is England? I was down to the last couple for... I mean, I think I remember sitting with Shane because I read for Woody and I was...
What?
Yeah, and I did a couple of meeting Shane and Stephen. I remember Shane calling me up going, yeah, mate, you're really good. I did it last two, but there's this other guy, and he's fucking amazing. If he takes it, you're gubbed. I was like, you watch it, you see Joe, and you go, all right, I get it.
And
I remember Des Hamilton. And it's mad that, because when you watch it, because it's a film and a series I love so much, and I'd have played that completely different and completely wrong. You know, I had a different take on it. And that Woody character's so iconic. And because you've got to love him as the leader. And also, but I remember Des phoning me, because Des was phoning, right, you're coming down for the audition. He says, we'll find this wee lad in Grimsby. He's unbelievable. So I met, it's amazing to see where you're at now.
Oh, mate, I had no idea. I had no idea that you auditioned for that. But I listened to your two-shot podcast with Craig Parkinson, who's a friend of our podcast and a personal friend of mine and Andy's. I remember I was listening and I was in my kitchen and just I think I sent you a message actually after I'd listened to it, just saying how amazing it was to see how well you're doing in your life and in your career, knowing that you from the similar circumstances as me and Andy. Like it's a breath of fresh air to know that, you know, you haven't got to you know, come from RADA or any of them things, you know.
Well, it's that thing as well, because you boys will know. I mean, we got a good start, and I owe it to Ken Loach, you boys owe it to Shane, but after that, it's a rough ride. It's a cutthroat business we're in, man. And it's hard to try to explain to people just how much rejection's involved. I mean, I've done all right for myself, but for every job I've got, I've missed probably another 20 or 30. You know, it's hard... hard graft, and I think that's what people, and there's all a lot of stuff that comes with it, but I think the ones you find out, you kind of get into this job to be famous, you know what I mean, which I think some people have got the wrong idea of it, where the kind of awards do's and all that kind of thing and dinners and nights out, they can be a nice bonus, but it needs to be at 2 o'clock in the morning in the pissing rain when you're being asked to go again and you need to bring it. That's what you need to love doing. You need to love your actual job. I'm never happier than when I'm on set trying to make something come alive.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, genuinely. See, it's like you said, there's been times when I've had to be in the sea, in the water, in Norfolk at 4 in the morning, freezing my bollocks off.
but still loving my job, you know, and that's, I think that's the important thing. But I personally think the hardest work we do is when we're not working. I think when you're sitting around and you're sort of twiddling your thumbs waiting for the phone to ring, and sort of you feel a bit useless, don't you?
Absolutely.
Particularly without kids. Oh, the self-doubt. Yeah, it's it could be tough. It can be tough. But just going back to the what you just said there about the award ceremonies and nice dinners, that'll take us nicely into your subject, I think. Do you want to talk to us about your subject?
Well, the first one was Sunday roasts.
Sunday roasts.
Yeah. I think Sunday roasts are basically a conspiracy to get all the plain and bland shit out your fridge on a plate and feed your family. Peas, carrots, broccoli, Brussels sprouts. I mean, when would you eat them any other day of the week?
I do like Brussels sprouts.
I can't have them, man. And it's just...
No, that's disgusting, yeah.
I mean, growing up as well, we always had Chinese on a Sunday night in our house. And there's also a side to it, maybe. Like, I didn't realise I got older, because I always thought my mum was a bad cook, and it's not. It's just my dad likes everything burnt to a bloody crisp, and there's no taste to it. And I always thought, and it wasn't until I was older, and I started asking my mum, can you cook mine's different, and realised she was a good cook. But it's just, you can eat what your dad was getting. Yeah. So our Sunday, them kind of roasts were never great, but I just can't eat. And what is the main thing? Is it a turkey? Is it ham? I mean, what is a quintessential Sunday roast?
I think beef in it is like the normal. I get it might be regional or something, but I think roast beef is like the what you're supposed to have on a roast. I don't know though. I like lamb.
Roast chicken.
Yeah, roast chicken.
And I still to this day don't know what the Yorkshire pudding's supposed to be. Is it sweet? Is it a pudding? Is it a pastry? I don't get it.
So you don't like Yorkshire puddings?
No, I genuinely don't get it. Look, if anything, if you've got a good gravy and you can whack it on everything, that'll save it. You can eat anything with a good gravy. If you've got a poor watered down gravy, no, I find it like, you know how when we're on set as well, there's usually like fish Fridays or whatever, like those set things you get on days. See, if we're working on Sunday and it's a catering Sunday roast, I mean, I don't think I've ever been so depressed in my life.
Oh, you've got to, the caterers have got to be very good to pull off.
Yeah.
Good Sunday roast. I agree.
And you're working a Sunday anyway, you know what I mean? You're already a bit raging. It's just, they're not for me. And I think it always annoys me when somebody says, do you like a Sunday roast? And you go, no. I go, oh, that's because you've not tried mine. You're like, they're all the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's just everybody's going, you've got to try mine. And it says, because our Vic, you know what I mean? Vic loves a good Sunday roast. And it's good.
Yeah.
It's good, but I just like peas and carrots and broccolis and, nah, Tyskane, I'd rather have a Chinese on a Sunday night.
I must say that Charlotte, my wife, makes the best Sunday roast I've ever had. And yesterday when you messaged your subject, it was funny because you said about Sunday roast, and I was literally sitting there after just nailing a Sunday roast that Charlotte had made me. So what did I have? I had a roast chicken dinner with, it had cabbage, carrots, mashed potatoes, roast potatoes, broccoli. We had some sausages on there as well.
Jesus Christ, you went it tight.
Yes, it was a mammoth of a meal. But
proper sausages are like pigs in
blankets. How would you get sausages on a Sunday roast?
Yeah, that's a bit
I don't complain, mate. I just take it like
he knows where his bread's buttered.
I know what's happening.
Well, but that's it. You because as well, like you're on a gauntlet with the totties. Like if you got really good roast totties, amazing. Mm. If they're hard, roast potatoes.
All right.
Sorry, Tom. Should I get subtitles on Skype for you?
roast totties we see up there.
Oh, are we there, guys?
Yeah, can you hear us?
Yep.
Yeah, you disappeared for a second there.
Roast totties, but even again, if the mash is good, but they can be really hit and miss if they're lumpy and guy. For me, they're just not for me. I mean, even we got to, I think we used to have a Chinese on Christmas Day.
What? Oh, really?
Yeah. And I loved
Was the Chinese takeaway open on Christmas Day?
Yeah,
because people have
the whole.
People have curries, don't they, and stuff like that. I've heard of people having like Indian takeaways, Chinese. That's a thing.
Well, we kind of used to order the whole menu sort of thing and put it out like on a mat on the floor and just help yourself. And then we'd have the sort of Sunday roast thing on Boxing Day with my grandpa and stuff.
This is an outrage, I must say. This is absolutely blown me away.
If I'm going round somebody's to dinner or somebody invites me round to dinner, I try to make sure it's not a Sunday. Just because I know that's what you're getting.
Just in case.
Yeah.
When we asked you about an overrated subject, was it straight away?
I tell you what, because I kind of changed it up a bit because, as you said, you sent me Stevie's and you boys touched on it. Reality TV would have been a big one for me, but I think you've covered that pretty well. Because I think there's a pretty dark side to reality TV as well, which I think we've all seen of late.
Of course.
Definitely. I think because a lot of these kids, I mean, because there was one incident I remember. And I think as well, I mean, I think from our industry, I've met a lot of the bods from it. And a lot of them are sound as anything. You know what I mean? Like some of them became really good pals, but sort of be this industry where you're churning a lot of these kids out and you make them super famous for like 6 months and then they kind of get dropped.
Literally the most famous people in the country.
And then they're just when Love Island, and then there's a new series of Love Island or whatever. And it must be a head wrecker for some of them to go, I was on every TV show and everybody was loving me. You go, now I'm just forgotten about it. And you can see how some people go off the rails. And I first hand experience it with one of the talent shows it was, but I was filming in London and we're in the studios and down the corridor was one of the finalists and one of the singer ones. I don't know if it was like Britain's Got Talent or X Factor or something like that. And the lad had like 15 assistants with him. And I was trying to learn my lines and they were driving me up the wall. And I had to come down a couple of times. So this was people outside his room just hanging about making noise. And I had to say to him, like, can you move away? Like, I've got work to do here. And it was just come out and he had literally about 15 people around him. And about a year later, I was like at a regional Scottish Awards do, and the same lad was the entertainer. And I can remember everybody just being pissed and kind of talking over him, singing and stuff. And it just made me feel really kind of sad. And I was like, Jesus Christ, I mean, that must be so tough. Going from that kind of level of people thingy to now. Yeah, I think there is a... And people love it because again, Andy, what kind of made me laugh about it is because what you were saying about football. I'm obsessed with grown men chasing a ball about a field, so we don't have the right to look down on anything. And I'm not, you can't look down on it. People enjoy it. That's, I think, it takes away from actually getting invested in dramas and stuff. But if people watch it, that's what people like. But I definitely think there's a darker side to it where
these people
get kind of built up and then sort of discarded. And I don't think that's sort of put out there enough. I don't think there's enough protection for them.
I think one thing, I think we said it on with Clint Boone because we spoke to him about reality TV quite a lot, is like we were saying earlier on, you know, we've been doing this pretty much since we were all around about the same age, and we've grown up, like you say, with just rejection becoming the norm, where you know, I always say, like, you know, if you're in a band, you start off probably playing like shit, working men's clubs, getting booed off the stage, et cetera, et cetera. So you learn to deal with rejection earlier and then you hopefully make it. And then when you make it, you can be a bit humble. You can go, well, you know, I've come from that and now I'm where I am. Where, like you say, a load of these reality stars, you know, one day they're working in a factory and then the next day they're on an island with, you know, 20 other beautiful people. And then when they get home, they're the most famous person in the country. And it's like, they've not had that internal growth of being rejected or anything. So when they get rejected for the first time, you know, whilst being famous, it must, you know, just fucking mess with their head so much.
It must as well. And hang as well, as a country, what we're really good at is building people up in order to bring them down. So kind of, you wanted people that, and then people, so you're throwing a lot of these people then into wild parties and stuff, and everybody's on them to see what they do wrong, because that's in a... Once you've got them famous, the next big story is the fall.
So yeah, what? How can they? Yeah,
they're under the spotlight for everything they do, and whether they have an argument in the street, whether they're doing something daft at a party or whatever, a lot of people do it, but they're under such a magnifying glass for that period of time that, because it is a big story, whatever they do wrong. And again, as you've just said, Andy, they've probably never dealt with that before, and then all of a sudden they're on the front page. And I can definitely see how somebody could, you know, really, really do something unfortunate when you're under that sort of pressure.
Well, it's like the level of fame, and everybody wants a piece of you. You know, you're going to these, and I found it. Say if, I don't know, this is England's being released or anything that you're working on, for a space of 6 months, everyone wants to know, everyone wants you at their parties. Everyone wants to give you their clothes. Everyone wants to give you this and give you that. And then suddenly you notice it just drops.
It just
and then
stops.
It's like,
minute, mate.
And then it's like, wait a minute.
It's
and
really
I think
funny
we're,
with this. No, exactly what you're saying, but you see with the Nest being on at the minute. It's kind of interesting, like
you've got 15 iPads now, you know.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Yeah, everybody's sending you, everybody wants this. Can you come on this show? Come on that show? And then it does, it just completely, because there's somebody else.
Well, I must say that we've been trying to get you on here since before the Nest. just disclaimer, you know, it's not the Nest that's made us want you on here, just so that the audience are aware. But go on.
No, but that's it, mate. And then it'll be Line of Duty, and then it'll be well, and for that. I think, it's just so funny that, like you said, you get invited to everything for that period of time, and then you won't get in the door again, you know, until something else is out.
And we're just very fortunate that, you know, if we work hard, we get the opportunities again to, you know, to be in great shows and things like that people are going to watch. Whereas, you know, for these reality TV stars like Love Island, once they've done Love Island once, the chances are they're not going to get to go in it again. So it is literally like they're sort of fighting a battle to stay in this limelight and live this lifestyle that they've been living, and it can be a real struggle.
Sorry, Andy.
I was going to say, like you said before, Martin, like, you know, if you get in this game to become famous, you're probably not going to do very well, and you'll soon realise, like you say, that it is a bit shit. Where at least, you know, we have got a. I won't say we've got a skill, because I'm sure a lot of them people have got skills as well, but we're, you know, we've got a love and a passion for acting. So that keeps us in it. Once we realize, like you say, that the fame and stuff can be a bit shallow and a bit shit, where these guys are literally just getting in it for that.
For being beautiful.
To be famous, to be known as.
That becomes their job. Their job is to be famous then. And it's, it's always feel, I mean, that kind of was, side on to my next subject, but as part of that, when you kind of meet these people, they're always on. You don't feel like you can have a real conversation with them, because their job is to get like a headline, to get something in the papers the next day, because that keeps the wheels turning. And it's very hard work at times. But then, you know, we Kem Ketney, who did the soccer ed with Kem's a great lad and got his head screwed on. So he's got, I think he already was a clever lad and had a couple of things going. So when it's somebody like that and you marry the two, then it's great. But when other people, when they don't really have anything to fall back on, then it's going to be a struggle for them.
You get a very small handful of them that do invest and start businesses. And like Gaz from Geordie Shore, I know he invested very early on from Geordie Shore and invested his money, and now he's no longer in Geordie Shore, but he's still working and still earning money and providing for his family. Otherwise, you know, you can see it with a couple of the others from Geordie Shore. They've sort of just completely gone off the radar since leaving the show.
It's tough, man. It really is. It really is.
Yeah, it's it can be fickle. Fickle.
Right, subject two.
That's what I was just about to say. Go on.
Yeah, because this one goes on to it, I guess.
Yeah, it does. But I do, because I really want your opinions on it as well, boys, because you've been there. Award does.
Award ceremonies.
Award ceremonies. Thank you, Toms. because growing up, you see these things on the telly and it looks so glamorous and everybody's dolled up and their dicky bows and gowns, and you go, oh my God, one day. And you get there. And they're the longest,
boring.
Most boring
for me. Yeah.
And I can't do small talk. And award ceremonies are the World Cup of small talk.
Yeah.
You know, it's just chat and people bullshit and then going, oh, I love you in this, I love you in this. And half the time, you know, people don't even know who you are. And going, it's all this kind of, and all these fake kind of promises is we're going to work this together. And you guys don't know, I mean, and plus in Blind of Duty, we always get beat, which is never great. the thing that kills me is if you're not nominated or famous, to an extent, see when you walk up to that thing, and there's like a bank of photographers and you can tell none of them are interested in taking your picture. It's the most gut-wrenching feeling, man. It's just, you just sink into yourself. And then if you don't, it's expensive to have a PR, but see, if you don't have a PR, then you just get hounded around these journalists. And again, some of them aren't even interested in talking to you. I mean, I'm lucky the last couple of years, things have went, it was years I was there and you just sort of feel like you're lost wandering around. And it can be a good night out if you're all together, a great catch up with the troops, and it's lovely if you win and stuff. But again, as well, you kind of realise it's stuff as well. They are all bullshit. Because I'm saying, I've saw James McAvoy and Filth, which I thought was the best lead performance of any British film of that decade. Same with Stevie Graham and This Is England supporting. And I think Line of Duty Series 3 is the best writing in TV I've ever seen. None of them even. They never even got, not the one, Stephen Graham and James McAvoy never even got nominated for awards. And I'm just thinking, so then you can kind of go how subjective it is and how these juries, and a lot of them do have agendas and stuff. And so it's, they can be, I say, a cracking night out at times if you're out, but in the main, you're sitting there starving, dying for a drink.
They don't feed you at the BAFTAs, do they?
No, because because these are when you're in mix as well. Because at the BAFTAs, they want you to be sober but while the thing's going on, because it's so long. And where there's other ones where you go and it's the dinner first, and then everybody's pished. And everybody's listening by the end of the night. They're just such a weird...
It's a funny
it's
one.
It's not what it looks like on TV. What do you guys think?
I agree with you.
Go on, Andy.
I agree with you, because my... like my missus, she'll sit religiously and watch the fucking, is it the NTAs? And it's like, you know, heavily edited. Obviously, it's only on for like an hour and a half. You know that award ceremony's gone on for about 5 hours because you've got the, you know, the best lighting or the best this and the best that. I agree with you, mate. Like you say, I remember watching stuff like that as a kid and thinking, oh yeah, this is going to be amazing. And then, like you say, the first time you go to one, the ones I've been to, you know, it normally is like the meal first and you end up having a fair few drinks beforehand. And then you just sat there, nailing the wine. And then you just sat there literally waiting for the last person to get up and, you know, so you can carry on the night, I guess.
So you can carry on, exactly. But mate, the NTAs are a weird one because... I like them just because they're voted by the audience. And the audience are there and the O2 kind of thing. But it's such a weird mix of people because it's drama through reality TV and it's mad. Like again, because it's like you're walking in to sit down and you've got, as I say, a lot of these people, they're just on because they're on TV and they're just showing off. In terms of they just want to be the loudest, they want to be the most heard because they want to get on camera. And I find that a pain in the arse. And also, they're just... And also, the weird one is, the bigger one's like the NTAs. So when you leave your seat at that, they have people dressed up to come and sit in your seat for you.
Yeah, to make it look full. Yeah,
so I heard there was a funny story with Lewis Capaldi recently, wasn't there?
Somebody had a seat. But I mean, I think one of them, because a Line of Duty, we're so used to getting beat. We were up for the first award and we got beat like in a bit, and then we just fucked off. Because we're like, we're not sitting through this all night if we got beat again. And but they have people sitting in your seat, so we weren't missed, you know. But there really is. I mean, I know people sitting here thinking, going or listening, going like, what are you moaning about, kind of thing. But all I think I'm really trying to say is basically what you're saying, boys, is they are overrated. They look this incredibly glamorous night out, and they're really not.
You get the odd one, like you said. I think the best ones are the ones where the members of the public are there as well. Have you ever been to the NME Awards, Martin?
Yeah, I can't remember much about it, but I was
there. I mean, that
that still to this day is one of the best one of the best nights in my life. Like I'm the same as you with things like don't get me wrong. Obviously, like with the British Independent Film Awards or the Empire Awards.
Yeah, Peppers are good night
out. Yeah, you know they're kind of.
Do you not think though? Because that's a very interesting point. Because the NMEs are basically a music awards with the film or TV attached. So we're there going, that was an amazing night because you're seeing all our heroes. Whereas the other nights are kind of industry awards for us. So we're there kind of talking shop. Well, the NMEs were just sitting there like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm sitting here.
Yeah, like you I'm know? Sat next to Coldplay. So, you know.
Aye, the Killers were sitting behind us and it was just a mental night.
So much fun.
Yeah. I mean, they properly kick off, don't they? That was an interesting evening.
And you don't have to wear a suit, which is the thing for me. Like, you've got to go to these bloody award ceremonies. You've always got to wear a suit. I'm like, And you know, if you find that you go into like the biffers and things like that, you're always talking shop all night. It's always like, what are you working on? Oh, you was great in this. Which you know, it's just to be in a room full of all the people who you admire in the industry, it's a great thing, and you can chat along, and you know, I've met some of the best people I've ever met at these award ceremonies. But if I've had a couple of drinks, I want to be talking about football, and I want to be talking about, you know, I don't want to be talking about what I'm working on.
And you
want
to be talking
next,
to your mates.
Yeah, well, exactly.
That's the thing. You want to be at your table having a laugh. And you've got to kind of. So it's good if you're all together and you can have a laugh, but then you've always got somebody tapping your shoulder going like, we're doing this thing on thingy and we think you might be good. And you're like, I know there's nothing ever going to come of this. It's just, you know what? The only time I've got to give props to Nicole for it. The only time it's ever happened to me is The Nest. I met Nicole at the BAFTAs the other year and she said, I'm writing something for you. And again, I just kind of never really thought much about it. And then I got an email ping saying, here's the scripts, you want to do it. But that's the only time it's ever happened.
Wow.
Because well, you're just trying not to make an arse of yourself as well, because after a while, you are going full tilt. And
yeah, and always find that when the booze is free, I always get more pissed.
Mate, this is something, I have to have this out with my dad and my pals when I take them to things. And I'm like, I don't get how, I think it's a very working class thing. When the booze is free, you feel you need to drink more.
Yeah,
you're like,
you do.
It's still going to be there. Just keep drinking.
Yeah.
I was at a charity do with my dad the other night, and I ended up having to stick in my taxi because the girl asked what does he drink, and she left him a bottle of vodka on the table, and he'd necked about three quarters of the thing before we'd hardly even started.
Oh my Jesus. God.
Because he's just going, are they going to, I think again it's a working class thing, him going, well what if they take it back sort of thing, you know, we may as well.
Yeah, get your money's worth kind of thing.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Get your money's worth.
Get your money's worth.
It's always that way. Like, so you go, if you take your mates to a do, and I suppose I'd have been like that at the start as well, but you're like, get a drink and they're free. They come back with like three rounds and shots.
Yeah. That like, you just hit the nail on the head when you said get your money's worth. It's like an all-inclusive holiday, isn't it? It's like one moment you realise that there's a bottle of vodka on your table. Next thing you're trying to drag your dad away from trying to have a fight with Matt Damon at the Empire Awards.
That's it. You're just like, but you're just like, just calm down. Like, it's all right. Like, we're here. You know what I mean? We're being well looked after. But I think it's that thing is, we take what you can get while you can get it.
Yeah, because, you know, you imagine, like, I don't know what your dad does or did do, but, you know, he probably wouldn't get that in his job, even at, like, the Christmas do or anything. Do you know what I mean? So I guess it is kind of
exciting. But it's that thing as well. But it's exciting because, I mean, it's a ball of vodka, like...
Yeah,
buy it during the week, it's nothing. You know what I mean? Same when we're having a night out, we can buy this stuff. It's not an issue, but I just think there's a thing in our head of what they're giving us this for nothing. Really?
Yeah.
Like, and then let's take full advantage. It's a weird thing.
It is. It's like that. We very fortunately when we was filming in Sheffield. There's a great place in Sheffield called Viper Rooms that used to they used to invite us in, and they used to give us this table, and they just used to bring bottle after bottle of everything we wanted. And it's like, because it's free, you're like, you're pouring the biggest measurements that you'd never ever have.
Uh-huh.
But just because it's free, you're like, oh, because there's so many people there, you're like, oh, I need to get my money's worth here. It's that sort of thing. But then when you are at an award ceremony, subconsciously you do know that you've got to sort of like rein it in a bit, because you can't be seen to be in, you know, being a knobhead at the BAFTAs or something, because that can get you in a lot of trouble. Do you know what I mean?
How do you find Tom Oates? Because I said we had such a similar start, and like same with This Is England, you were cleaning up a lot of the sort of the best newcomer things. I think we pretty much had the same route. I mean, did you find it a bit of a head wrecker that, like, at first you felt this is kind of easy, like it's your first one at the Biffers or whatever, and you're just picking these things up, and then all of a sudden it's not anymore. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden that kind of cycle stops, and you don't have a job. But you've got this wee cabinet full of these kind of shiny awards, and you go, like,
it was weird.
The next one, you thought, I thought right away I'd just be like, the offers would be coming in, and nothing at all.
No, it was weird when, because I remember the first night I ever went to, the first award ceremony I ever went to was the Biffers when I was nominated for newcomer. I must have been 14 or 15, and I went in this god awful shirt. And I think I might have been wearing my school trousers or something. I think I must have been. I know I didn't wear a full on suit, and I didn't look particularly smart, and my hair was like shit. But I went with my dad, and I just remember my dad just being like, "What the fuck's going on here?" He's walking around and he's meeting all the, you know, you've got Ken Loach walking about, you've got bloody Helen Mirren's over there dancing away, and you've got like people like Martin Freeman was, I'll always remember he came up to me that night, and obviously I was a big fan of his anyway, from Ali G, and obviously now I appreciate more of his great work, but for me it was like he was Ricky C and Ali G, and he came up to me, and I was like 14 15, and I remember losing my shit because he come up to me and spoke to me. I was like, this is fucking mental. But then, like you said, you spend all that time on that circuit, and it just goes back to the whole everyone sort of wants a piece of you. And then the film sort of died down a bit. And then I was this 15-year-old boy, and I had to go into the auditioning circuit. And I remember the second audition I ever had was for a series called The Innocence Project with Stephen Graham. And in that audition, I remember I didn't put my phone on silent, and Shane Meadows actually rang me whilst I was in the audition. And I didn't think about it. I just went... said to the people when it was ringing, I said, "Oh, just one second, I'm going to answer this mid audition."
Oh,
and I'm like,
man.
I know, but I ended up going on and getting a job. But I guess that's like where he's now. I think
it's a learning curve. But like my first auditions, I remember going down to London, getting sent down there, and Sweet 16 wasn't out yet, and I'm going into this audition, and I basically just wore what I'd wear to a nightclub. You know what I mean? Because I thought it was smart. I said, like, horrible shirt, and a cuff and matching collar was a thing at the time, and a pair of trousers. And you go in this room, and there's all these lads with, like, khaki trousers and T-shirts on, you know, all kind of casual. And I've never felt so out of place in my life. And I just went, I can't do this. You know what I mean? I just, like, I'm not, this isn't in my world. You know, but then I think you get a wee bit of fire in you from that, going, well, even if I'm not going to be here, I'm going to show them that I can act. You know, but it's so daunting, and I don't think people realize that, like, you're just sort of left to get on with it, you know. And I said it's mad, that circuit at first, and you've got all these huge agents kind of chasing you, but then the next film comes out and there's the next hot thing. And I always, something that really stuck in my head, I remember the night before the Sweet 16 premiere in Glasgow, because it'd done Cannes, it'd done a load of film festivals, and it was doing great. And I remember, like, reading a paper thing saying he's the next big thing. And I remember having, not a panic attack in my room, but...
Do you think you've made it, don't you? Like,
well, no, because I was thinking, right, well, now if I'm not the next big thing, I'm going to be a failure for the rest of my life. And that really kind of hit me hard. Like, well, I don't actually have a job or anything. What if the film's not any good, because it wasn't out in Scotland yet, and what, people don't like it, but I'm all over the front pages as the next big thing. And I was like, it's just, I mean, you were even younger than me, Tomo, but I mean, I was 17 at that time, and it's just, again, there's a side of this business which the good times for me far outweigh the bad, and the good stuff that comes with it, but it can be a rough ride at times.
Yeah, definitely, like you say, and from doing, you know, again, in a similar boat, like doing something you know, I remember when Sweet 16 came out, my mum got it me on DVD because I think I was about sort of 16, I think, when it kind of came out, or maybe a little bit younger. You know, it was a big, I remember it being quite big, and the same as This Is England. So you kind of started off with something really big, and then the next thing that you do, it just doesn't seem to be as in your head, I guess, at that age. Oh, this isn't that big, this isn't that good, you know.
Yeah,
what am I doing? I should be getting, you know, and you know, I'm supposed to go on to bigger and better, but it's just not the way that the industry works, I guess, is it?
How did you feel with it? How, like, especially after it went to series, because I mean, those characters and even that picture of you all against a brick wall became so iconic. I mean, do you just find it tough going into other stuff and going, I'm not exactly that guy, I'm an actor playing a part?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've done a fair few jobs where you can kind of tell people are shocked that I'm not thick as pig shit.
I don't know, mate. That is up for debate. But we can talk about that on another podcast. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, you do, don't you? Because, like you say, with This Is England, a lot of people, a lot of other actors, you know, have watched it. So when you go and do a new job and you're working with a new set of actors that you've not worked with, it sometimes the questions get raised, or what's it like doing this and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just nice to be a part of something like that other, you know, that your peers love, I guess.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the thing as well. We've got to be careful as well in terms of, because it can be a monkey on your back, but it's also something you've got to be extremely proud of. You know, it's a piece of work that any actor would have killed to be part of. You know what I mean? And it's always going to be the question, when's the next installment? And that's a really good position to be in, or to have left it in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of, you sort of feel like you've just touched on there, Martin, when you said that when people are writing all these amazing things about you and that you're going to be the next big thing, blah, 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 blah. It's like it adds that pressure onto you, doesn't it? Because it's like you've almost started at the top and then you're like, you then got to work again from the bottom to do other parts. And it's like, but I mean, for me, I'm always super grateful and super proud when people come up to me in the streets. But for some reason, when people recognize me for other work, it's sort of like, one in particular, there was an elderly couple in Mexico when I was on holiday. They came up to me at the bar and they said, Are you that guy from Swimming with Men? We watched it on the plane on the way over, and I sort of had like a sense of pride. I was like,
"Oh mate, you got me buzzed from that, absolutely."
Yeah. Oh man, it's like because the amount of times that, I mean, you can never get bored of people saying you know the nice things that they say about This Is England, but when people are recognizing your other work as well, it's sort of a sense of like, yeah, man, like I have done other great work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely understand what you're saying there. It's a kind of sense of pride that you have done other stuff. Absolutely, mate. I can completely understand that.
Yeah, it's a lovely feeling. It's nice to know that your work's being appreciated. It really is.
Just not at award ceremonies. they can fuck off.
Well, it's a game, but don't get me wrong. Like, if you win at the things, it's a good laugh and it's good to be recognised and stuff and all that. But I genuinely just think, well, they are overrated, lads.
Yeah. I think I agree with the award ceremony. Some of them can be good fun, Enemy Awards in particular.
But I hear there's a caveat about the Sunday roast here, is there?
Well, I think what you're saying about what you're saying about Sunday roast is absolute bullshit, and I can't get on board. I absolutely cannot get on board with what you're saying, because do you not love, like, me and Charlotte on a Sunday sometimes, we'll just get in the car and we'll take a 45-minute drive or an hour drive into the country, whether it be north, east, south or west, and find a random little countryside boozer and have a really, really nice roast and a nice cold pint of beer. And I think there's nothing better than that for me. A lovely, lovely roast.
Everything apart from the roast. The cold beer, the drive, the pub. But then I'd just get a nice steak. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, are you one of them people, Tomo, that, like, when you go on holiday abroad, if you go Spain, have you got to find a Sunday dinner?
Yeah,
I would never sit in 35 degrees heat and eat a Sunday dinner.
Never. That is
disgusting. I don't get them people.
Imagine some of the southern cities you'd find in Benidorm. The places I go on holiday, like Benidorm and Magaluf and Ibiza, like... Yeah. You're not finding a decent Sunday dinner in any of those places. No.
Well, I'm find them. I mean, I remember my first boys' holiday, I think we went to Magaluf, like 16, and it was across from the EastEnders bar. There was this bar, just played the EastEnders on repeat, and it was on our balcony. They were in there every night. Like, you've just flew here to sit and watch EastEnders for 2 weeks.
I don't understand. Only fools and horses bars.
Yeah, but all that, I kind of get my head around that. I mean, you've got all that beach and all that bit of culture out there and just getting absolutely lagging. Get out and get on it.
I guess it's kind of people go on holiday, don't they? And they fly away from there, but they try their hardest to... Like, say if they went to Spain and the only thing that they could eat was tapas and paella... They would freak out because there's no full English breakfast, and it's like, well, you're going on holiday, mate. Like, surely you should try and change
another
it up
country. And the other thing is, I always feel the amount of people when you're in Spain or something, people always apologising for their English, and you're like, I'm the ignorant one, mate. I'm in your country. I mean, I should be trying to speak your language, not the other way around. And I feel we get very inward with that, and we kind of expect everybody to kind of do things on our terms, you know.
Yeah, it's always a funny one. I've just been filming over in, I went to a place, the Garafi Desert in Spain, and we was in this little tiny town called Guadix, and I reckon we are one of very few bunch of English people that have been over there, because they were sort of like really confused. There was like, what are you doing in this tiny little village? And I was kind of a little bit ignorant in a way, because I was thinking about food in the evenings after a long day at work, and I'm thinking I like my home comforts, and there wasn't a McDonald's and there wasn't any of this. The only thing was real local food, and I remember ringing Charlotte some nights going, I just want a Macca's. I just want all the food. And I guess that's sort of the ignorance in the Britain.
Oh, did you try the local cuisine? Did you try it?
Yeah, I did try it, of course, but there was a coach that left twice a day from Guadix that went to Almeria, and they had a McDonald's
and Macca's.
And so I did that. I went all the way to Almeria for a McDonald's.
I did the same. I remember the first time I went to Cannes and the French food. I had to get a Mac and D's ordered in the first time, but I've kind of branched out a bit and tried. Actually, cause it's a whole different way of eating out there and stuff. My ex, actually, she taught in Girona outside Barcelona, so she was living there for a couple of years, so I was staying there quite a lot. And at first, it kind of drove me mental the way they would eat, because you go out at like 8 o'clock and order some food, and it could take like somebody's starter would come and your starter wouldn't come for another 15 minutes, and then somebody's main and yours would come. It would drive me mad, going like, I just ordered my food, just bring it at the same time. And then I realised that it's not about how quick you eat; it's an event. It's about sitting together for a few hours, and you'd see all these families out for hours, like till 11, 12 at night, with their baby sleeping in the pram. I suppose they've got the weather to do it. But I really learned to kind of love the culture of it. When the first couple of weeks, it was driving me mad that it would take time. But they were going, what's your rush? Have a wee glass of wine. Have a sip of water. Order some tea. Just relax and have a chat. Whereas I think we're kind of get the food down. You get it.
That's actually a really good point. That's a really good point. If you're in a restaurant in England and you order food, if it hasn't come in, like if it hasn't come in half an hour or 25, 30 minutes, you'll be like... I ordered this fucking food ages ago, and it's like you make a really good point. Like, what is the rush? There's no, you're going out for a reason. I never looked at it like that. That's
and
a
again,
good point.
Don't get me wrong. If I was waiting half an hour for my starter, I wouldn't be happy either, wee man. I think you're right there. it was more of a. It became more of an evening kind of thing, and I learned to really enjoy it. Like, we would go out every night and just sit for hours, and you end up just chatting. Again, I suppose they've got the weather for it, haven't they?
Yeah. I think you know, the situation that we're in at the moment, because we do sort of live life in Britain, like, really fast, you know. We don't sit and eat with our friends. We just try and get it, like you say, get it down us, or even drinking, do you know what I mean? We don't go out to drink to socialise now. We go out to drink to just get hammered. You know, hopefully
the situation that, that we're in might slow that down, because I can't wait to just go and sit in a pub for the day now and just yeah. have a drink, see who walks in the door and be like, "Hey, mate," do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because
no, it's really funny. And I actually had a conversation with one of my pals last night, and he made a good point. He called me, and I think now, see, because you've got WhatsApp, it's a great thing in that you're in these groups with my pals from home in Greenock, and you feel like you're talking every day, which you really are, because you're just texting nonsense. Whereas he phoned me and he went, "You know what? This is the first time we've spoke face to face for months." I mean, yeah. I know it's FaceTime, you know what I mean? But he's like, "We never actually talk. We just text on this thing." I mean, I never really think that. I mean, you never really, because you feel like you're in contact, but you're never actually. And you're like, "How's the kids?" You know, and
so yeah, you just texting daft stuff, aren't you? And
yeah, you're just forwarding stupid stories and talking about football. So you feel like we're talking all the time, but you're really not. And I think, as you said, Andy, I think that's hopefully something. So if a few people have, like, I've made a point of just going, right, actually, let's kind of have an actual conversation, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've found that I've become so much more closer to a lot of people during this time. It's like, I'm like people are making more of an effort, and myself included, you know, we're making more of an effort with people because you've got more time throughout the day to sit and send a text. And, you know, I was on FaceTime to a friend of mine who I've not spoken to for a long time. I was on FaceTime to him the other day for an hour, 2 hours. And it's like, it's a lovely treat that we've not really had the time to do, you know, because life just runs away with you in a way, doesn't it? So it's like, it's kind of nice to.
Yeah, and it really does. And you think as well, because I spoke to, I mean, he's no Warren Brown. Well, don't you, boys? Are.
Yeah.
You know, Wazza, I spoke to Wazza last night, and what an afro he's got growing at the minute.
As
lockdown. But again, I was just laughing because I think it's the first time me and him have spoke and not one of us have been drunk. Because usually it's the other one phoning, we're drunk and going, "Oh, I want to speak to you." So we're having a conversation with one. And I was like, it's the first time two of us were sober. So we're just sitting in the house, you know, but we're just laughing about that. You should get Warren on.
Me and me and Charlotte was talking earlier on. We haven't been in a pub for 3 weeks and 2 days, and it's like, it's kind of like, no, not in a way. Like, don't get me wrong, I can't wait to sink a pint of Peroni. Like, that's
went all posh in the world.
Oh, wow. Peroni. I mean, it's either Peroni or Birra Moretti. For some reason, I'm well into my Italian lagers at the minute. I mean, call it what you want, guys, but I have had a good year. So,
what you know. See in the States. Because Stella is European, they think it's a posh beer.
Really?
Yeah, because it's European, so you go, "I'll pin a Stella Artois, please, guys." And they're like, really posh.
Oh, my God. Nice. So do you know, just going back to so you live in Vegas, Martin. Is that very close to like the Strip, or is it, do you live away from it all? Or?
Yeah, we're about 20 minutes north of it, mate. It's a weird, like, I really love it here. The reason we moved here, my wife's from here.
Right.
I was on the road that much, and, you know, you're getting to age of thinking about families and stuff. And I kind of always wanted to, like, have my kids raised in Scotland and stuff. So we do split our time quite a lot between here and Scotland. And I'm in the UK probably a lot more than I'm in Vegas. But I thought, I saw so many of my actor pals who live in London or LA, and then they've had kids, and it's such a struggle for them without a support network. You know, they've got nobody to babysit, and you've seen, like, whether one of them was going away for a shoot for a couple of weeks, and one's left with a couple of kids, they're going off on that, and it's putting a strain on the relationship and all that kind of stuff. And so I just thought, like, if I'm going to be on the road, I mean, last year, I left here last year in March and got back at Christmas. You know, that's, 9 months? On the road, and so I thought it was important, like, my missus was near her mum and her family and pals and that kind of stuff, and then I'm in the UK filming all the time anyway, so it's easy enough for me to nip back to Greenock and see my family, you know. But I mean, it's a mad town. Like, the Strip is mental if you need it. It's good, and I like a bit of the boxing and the UFC, so that's all.
Do you get to many events?
I try to, mate, but any time there's a good fight, I'm out of town. But it's, I got to, I kind of was the, my pal, hopefully, Josh Taylor, is a brilliant Scottish boxer.
Yeah.
Josh was out here training. I think Josh is going to have a fight coming up here soon, which would be great. I don't think he's next one, but hopefully the one after. I mean, see, with the Strip, it's kind of like saying you live in London and you live in Leicester Square. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Nobody lives on the Strip. It's mental.
Yeah.
But actually, out Vegas is huge. There's a few million people live here.
All right, okay.
Yeah, it's a big old town. And I think because we're out in the desert, there's a lot of land. So compared to somewhere like LA where you're probably getting a pokey flat for a fortune, a one bedroom, you know, you can buy a big old house here, you know?
Yeah.
And it's... Yeah, I love our gaff. I've built my little bar. I'll pull people in, nice. You know, so...
But you can be over in LA. You can be over in LA in, what, three hours, four-hour drive?
You can drive it in 3 hours. It's 50 minutes on the plane.
Yeah, I mean...
It's no bother. But as well, you know, you guys know as well now, everything's done on tapes.
Everything that's tape, it, yeah.
So you don't really need... The only time you actually need to be in the room is if you're down to the last one. Or, you know, so it's easy enough to get about. I really like it, lads. It's...
The next thing you need to do, mate, is buy the house that you had in the Nest. I mean, that is one of the most beautiful houses in the world, isn't it?
It's insane, mate.
Seeing photos on your Instagram a while ago and thinking, oh, that looks nice. But then when you see it, I mean, that is the most beautiful house I've ever seen.
It's as well, because it's a bizarre bit, because you look out the window and one day there was a couple of seals and there was dolphin pod, but also that... Because I live across the water from that. Well, that's where I grew up. And that's where all the nuclear subs for Britain are kept.
Trenches.
So, yeah, so you have a submarine going by the window every now and again. I remember doing some ADR, for the first step when I hadn't seen it. And looking out that window, it looks like green screen because it's so beautiful.
So beautiful.
It's mental. And it's either ways as well. On a beautiful day, it's lovely, and even on this, because it's all surrounded, it's like full those panoramic windows. In a storm, it's amazing as well, you know, with some quite horrendous, but like you feel like you're in the bloody thing, you know, like a log fire burning and rain lashing the windows, right. All that.
And tell me, great. And go on.
It was bang on, and as well, there's a scene with me and Sophie out on the decking, and there was a kind of storm going on around us, and it's kind of like, it's like the kind of the most natural, amazing theatre stage to be on, you know, because the way there's a lovely guy called Matt Gray shot the first few eps, and he shoots it, I don't know how Shane shoots, but the way kind of Ken Loach shoots, it's kind of documentary style, where there's no marks and all that kind of thing, the camera just moves with you. And I love that because I think we get quite cynical as we get older. I think it's just natural as you learn your craft, but you're very aware when the camera's not on you and when it's on you. Mm-hmm. Because the way that was shooting, the camera was so fluid that it could just spin and be on you. So everybody had to be on their toes all the time. You know, everybody was getting
It's great for the other performers as well, isn't it? Because everyone's in it all the time.
All the time, exactly, mate. Because I think naturally you can sink off going, right, I've got... Because we become very aware of... The camera's facing that way. By the time we finish that side, it's going to be another 20 minutes turnaround. And by the time they get to me, I think naturally in your head, you can conserve energy, subconsciously or not. Because I think as well, when the camera's not on you, I think you try and give more just to show I'm giving more. You know, you want to be seen to be doing it. But I think in your head as well, there are times where you probably think it's a long day and I've got a big crying scene or something coming up. So I need to save a bit. Yeah. Whereas with the camera's on the move all the time. Need to be on it every single take.
Oh, that's brilliant. And just quickly, please tell me you insisted on driving that car.
Of course I did, pal.
Of course I fucking did.
Of course, I'm trying to get price of the bastard as well, but I've learned quite a lot. Bentleys apparently lose their value, mate, pretty quickly. But
I can imagine.
Don't worry, I was there's a few scenes because I think my wife was going like, she said last night when she was watching, going, now the stuntman put the foot down there, and I was just laughing because I wouldn't let anybody near that car. That's a lovely thing as well, isn't it, when you get to do these jobs and gives you that motor, because you feel the bollocks when you're cutting about in it, you know?
Yeah, it helps you get into character, doesn't it?
Absolutely, mate, absolutely.
Yeah, I must say, mate, it's genuinely one of the best things that I've seen in a long time. It's... So, like you said, so real and so gritty, and it's just good. Brilliant. Looking forward to the finale, mate. You've got so it's on Sunday night, isn't it? And then again on Monday.
Next Sunday night, and then Easter over the Easter weekend, and then the final episode's on the on the Monday night at the Nine. And wow. It gets pretty wild, boys. That's the best I can say about it.
Nice.
It kicks off, and because Shirley Henderson comes into it. I don't know if you guys know. Nice. I mean, a lot of people know her from like Harry Potter and stuff, but I mean, for my generation, I mean, she's Trainspotting. She's Scottish acting royalty, you know, and she's this tiny wee thing, but she's one of the most intimidating people I've ever been on set with.
It's like Stephen Graham, I think, like that. He's the tiniest little man, but so intimidating. But
Stevie's a stocky wee bastard, you know, like.
Yeah, he's massive now, isn't he?
But,
Jack!
He's
sent me a photo the other day, and I was like, fucking hell.
He's loving it.
And he's got his skinhead back now as well, hasn't he?
I saw the wee man cut it for him, didn't he?
Yeah,
Shirley's just this mammoth presence. Lovely woman, but just really intimidating. Just somebody people have that natural aura.
It was lovely to see Kate Dickey come in as well. It was lovely to see that.
There was
a funny
thing, by the way, Matt. I swear to God, this happened, and it was quite ridiculous. So when we got the scripts through for that, that character, Nicole's wrote, think Kate Dickey, right? And then they made Kate Dickey audition for it.
They made her audition for it.
Yeah, well, she auditioned and she got it pretty quick. But can you imagine going into a room where the sides go for your character description says, think Kate Dickey, and then Kate Dickey's sitting across from you?
Oh, that's easy. Auditioning Kate Dickey. I've got this one.
That was a mental thing. And it's like, how could you go, like imagine going in and going, if the casting director goes, can you give me a bit more you? I couldn't get my head through it, you know what I mean? And I was like, what if you went in for the audition as somebody else and you saw Kate Dickey sitting across from you and the side said, think Kate Dickey. I was a mind, because she's class, Kate. She's so good.
So good. Yeah, I worked with Kate on Summer's Town years and years ago. And she's so great. And I remember meeting her, it was at the Biffa Awards when I was like 15, and she's just so lovely and just like, yeah, I've not seen her for a long time, but it always brings a smile on my face when I see her pop up and things.
She's brilliant.
Yeah, she really, really is. But they've got, you've managed to get a great cast for that. It's, it's such a great show, mate. So, yeah, buzzing.
Cheers, boys.
Yeah, cool. I think that about wraps us up, Martin, mate. Thank you very much for coming on, man, and giving us some time in your morning, right?
Yeah. I'm sitting in my wee cupboard in Vegas.
What time is it now?
In Vegas?
It is 20 past 12, so get up and
face the day. I reckon it's time for a swim, mate, don't you? I think it's time you went for a swim.
Well, mate,
you deserve it.
I just heated it up yesterday, so I'm going head first in there now.
Nice. No,
Thank you very much, mate.
Yeah, take care, Martin.
Lots of luck.
Thanks, mate. Take care, buddy.
Bye-bye. See you later.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The secret to summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil, clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Its signature scent of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com.
Thank you.
So Martin Compston could have played Woody.
Yeah, which is mad, isn't it? That imagine the parallel world out there where Martin Compston played Woody and Woody, Joe Gilgan plays Martin's character in Line of Duty.
Yeah, plays...
imagine that.
Yeah, that would... Yeah. But I mean, they're both amazing actors in everything that they do. I mean, yeah. It's really, really funny, actually, when Martin touches base that people say that his Scottish accent is not very good. And it's Scottish. But genuinely, when I first heard him on the phone, I remember I was on a night out in London. I think I was with Vicky and Martin rang him. Martin rang Vicky and she put him on the phone and he started talking. And I was like, who's this? And he was like, hey, it's Martin Compston. I was like, what? Why are you Scottish? Because I genuinely after watching Line of Duty, I genuinely thought, because admittedly, I'd never seen Sweet 16 at that point.
Have
so,
you not? Oh, you know.
Right? I have now, but yeah, I haven't at that point. But yeah, it was like, I genuinely, again, like we touched base, like my dad thought that Stephen Graham was a Cockney because of Snatch.
It's weird how you think that, isn't it? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, certain actors, because same with Martin, like, when we put the first episode of The Nest on a couple of weeks ago, a part way into it, I said to my missus, I was like, oh, that's his actual own accent, you know? She was like, what? I was like, yeah, no, that's his own accent. And she was like, really? Because we love Line of Duty. And she was like, really? And I was like, yeah. And she was a bit like, all right, I never would have, like you say, I never
I guess that means he's just nailing his job, doesn't it? I mean, he's nailing what he's doing. So, and he really is nailing life as well. Like, I'm so glad that we finally managed to get him on because I knew from day dot when we started this, he was one of the people that we really, really wanted to get on.
That we couldn't go to Vegas and record his house.
I know. And it really didn't disappoint. So, if you are listening, Martin, thank you very much for taking the time for us. I'm so excited, mate, for The Nest. Genuinely can't wait. Are you caught up now?
I'm caught up now. But this is going out on Monday, isn't it? So there was one on last night for everyone watching or listening. Yeah. And then there's one on tonight. So it's a double bill, isn't it? I am excited. I am excited.
I'm still in bed.
Are you really?
No, I'm not in bed. I'm just sat on my bed.
I'm outside in the garden,
in the garden. Yeah. But so The Nest, mate, I can't wait. So the last episode's tonight then, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. Us in the future will already know what happens on episode 4. But we don't right now, so that's good. But twist and turn, don't spoil it, but it's full of little twists and turns and who done it.
Writing's amazing.
And like Martin said, and after what, because obviously I'd only watched the first episode before chatting to Martin. But you can hear, like he says at one point in the chat, about the writer had put in the script, like, when you speak to this character, your accent will get a bit thicker and stuff like that. And you can really hear it. Yeah, because I'm speaking to you now. Probably even you, like our accents are quite different, but, you know. But I probably speak to my mates a little bit more Manc.
Yeah. Well, you would... When we was in Benidorm on my stag do, when you hear all the lads from Grimsby going, like, yeah, it's kind of... But then I've kind of, like... I never change who I am, but sort of, like, say if you're working or if you're doing interviews, you sort of curve it back a little bit, don't you? It was really funny, actually. You know, Jodie Comer actually got told that she had to pretty much drop her Scouse accent in America.
Really?
Yeah, when she was doing... When she was doing, like, the Late Late Show and Letterman and stuff like that. Yeah. She's so Scouse.
Well, she's another one. When I played an interview of hers to my wife, and I said, oh, that's her actual accent, and she's like, no, it's not. And I'm like, it is. But she's the master of accents, man. Killing Eve Series 2 yet?
No, not number 2.
Oh, mate, there's a beautiful scene. I think it's Series 2. Might be Series 1. Where she's like walking, it's Series 2, I think. She's walking around Eve.
It's Scottish.
No, mate, she's like walking around Eve and she's like, she's basically, Eve wants her to be a spy. And she's walking around Eve, like saying, like, do you want it American like this and just plays in American? Or she's like, or I could be like the Australian drunk and she's like plays in Australia and she just slips into each one and she's like, what? Oh, mate. Hopefully we'll have Jodie on soon.
Yeah, that'd be good. That would be good.
Well, we'll sort it out, can't we? We'll see what we can do. But let's talk about some of the guests, the amazing guests that we have got coming up.
Yeah.
A lot of people will have seen on Instagram that we've got our old buddy Shane popping up.
Yeah, Shane Meadows, yeah. Again, for us, we shut the laptop, rang each other back, and we were both like, that was the best one we've ever done.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think that's a brilliant one.
Yeah, if you've listened to the Steve Graham one and the Vicky McClure one, you kind of know what you're in for a little bit, but this time it's with the big boss in it, so it's really nice.
It's with the big boss, but he's not a boss, is he? He's kind of like, he's the uncle everyone loves and everyone listens to. And he's got such a soothing voice, I think. I could listen to him talk all day.
Yeah, same. Who else have we got? We've got Johnny Harris.
Johnny Harris, yeah, who obviously played Mick in This Is England 86-88.
Yeah.
London to Brighton, Jawbone. Yeah, so he's great. I mean, we probably shouldn't give all of them away, should we?
No. We've teased a few there. We've got a few more. We've got a good few more.
Some really good friends of ours as well. We're not all This Is England. I get that. Like when we started the podcast, we said that it's not going to be a This Is England podcast. But at the end of the day, these people are our real good friends. And, you know, we was in This Is England with them, but we're also fans of their other work and we're also fans of who they are as people. And we get that, you know, it's a good insight for the listeners to get that, you know, that side of them that they might not necessarily see. So, we've got some great, great people on. I mean, I've been buzzing with the reaction that we've, that people have been agreeing to come on, and obviously during a time like this. So, thanks to all the guests.
Yeah, and an amazing reaction from the people listening as well and watching. And, you know, whether you listen to us on the audio version, which a lot of people you still are, amazing, thank you. Please give us a rate, like go and rate us on whatever app you're on. Just leave a little review. It just helps grow the podcast and, same with YouTube as well. If you can get on there, subscribe to us, leave a comment, a like, all that jazz that frigging influencers ask you to do. Purely because that helps the podcast grow. And like me and Tomo said last week, we want to grow this now, especially in these times, so that it can maybe generate a little bit of revenue so that we can then donate that to various causes, whether it's local or, you know, the NHS or schools,
food banks.
There's loads of food banks. We'll put that money to good use, basically. There's a little bit in the Patreon as well, so we're going to start doing that soon. Mm-hmm. Subscribe, share.
Put it all over your Instagrams, tell your friends, just you know, just let people know that we are fucking mint at what we do. Simple as that.
So thank you guys. We're going to keep Who's Next Week a surprise. It's none of the people that we mentioned. So you have to wait for them, baby. Another week down, T.
Yeah, I'm loving it, mate. It's good to be back.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much, guys. Please remember what Vicky said last week as well. Stay in.
Stay at home. Enjoy the time at your own. Do your gardens. You know, chill. Have a beer in the garden. Watch loads of stuff. There's loads of great things on Netflix at the minute, so... Yeah, just chill at home, watch The Nest, watch This Is England, watch whatever you want, chill, stay at home.
Yeah, cheers guys, see you next week.